Today's reading tells the story of a daughter who later in her life comes to recognize her mother's wisdom. Poet Mae Sarton acknowledges that though her mother's hands had grown scarred by years of gardening barehanded, it is the only sure way to nurture life. She says, "I minded once to see her beauty gnarled, but now her truth is given me to live. As I learn for myself, we must be hard to move among the tender with an open hand and to stay sensitive up to the end." Our lives tumble and twist us. The world can be a harsh and violent place, and it's not easy to keep our hands or our hearts open. We are soft-skinned, tender-bellied creatures. Our bodies and our hearts are easily broken and bruised. It's natural to want some relief, some way to shield ourselves from life's disappointments and failures, to dull the piercing sting of grief. It's a real challenge sometimes to just stay present in our lives. What does it mean to be present? If I'm here, I must be present, right? Well, the kind of presence I'm talking about is a state of consciousness. It's about being mindful. It's about bringing your awareness, all of it, into the here and now. It's that unmixed attention that Simone Weil spoke of. We've all had days that we've rushed through. When looking back at the end of the day, it occurs to you that you never really connected with anyone. You were just barely there, just along for the ride, checking off to-dos off your list until you collapse in bed at the end of the day. The trouble is when days like this pile up and become the norm. Being present means being awake to your life. It means not missing out on what is right before you because your attention is occupied thinking about something in the past or in the future. And being present also means allowing all of the beauty and the joy, as well as the pain and the sorrow, to move in and through us. Descartes declared, "Cogito ergo sum," I think, therefore I am. But I think there's a tendency to confuse thinking with being, equating who we are, our true self, with our thinking mind. What's the relationship between thinking and being, identity and awareness, ego and self? Here's a question to ponder. If you sit quietly and begin to notice your thoughts as they arise in your consciousness, who or what is doing that noticing? In the 13th century, St. Francis of Assisi said, "What we are looking for is what is doing the looking." The Buddha, whose name means the awakened one, taught people to become aware of the limits of our ordinary consciousness. He said, "If we are awakened to the greater truth, our suffering would end." We all have access to that state of consciousness that is timeless awareness. It takes practice, but we can all learn to tune into that. Jesus of Nazareth spoke of a sense of eternal life and limitless love that is available to everyone. And Lao Tzu taught about the Tao, the primordial essence and fundamental nature of the universe. And the object of spiritual practice is to harmonize one's will with the essence of the universe, the creative power, the truth, the energetic current of life energy, of love energy, that some call God. The first step in becoming more present is to learn to notice our incessant mental noise, the monkey mind that the Buddhists refer to, the constant chatter in our head that we've come to accept as a part of our normal waking consciousness. When we become mindful of our thoughts, they no longer run us. Once a teacher pointed out to me that my self-criticism, like when I'm learning to try something new, something that I'm just learning, those nasty little voices come in and say, "Well, that was terrible. You did that all wrong." This teacher helped me see that those were just a set of habitual thoughts that I could be free of. She taught me that I could decide, I could make the choice not to give those thoughts my attention, not to agree with them or argue with them, just notice them and remove my attention. It's this removal of attention that begins to weaken them, and eventually, starved of attention, they lose their power, and you can see them for what they really are. I've even been able to have compassion for my fearful, small self who throws those critical thoughts out in a misguided attempt to protect itself. When I figured out how to do this, it felt like I had learned a superpower. It was so freeing. And having the skill makes learning new things so much more enjoyable. It's one thing to learn to stay clear and present with your own thoughts and feelings. It can be much more difficult to step into the fire with someone who is hurting. But the simple act of bearing witness to pain and loss begins the healing process. There are some times when the feelings are particularly heart-wrenching, and it can be a challenge to just simply be present with another person. When I was in seminary, I trained to work as a hospice volunteer. And a friend I'd met in the training asked me if I would visit her client for a couple of weeks because she was going to be going out of town for the Christmas break. She was ambivalent about leaving town because her client was pretty close to death, and she had grown really attached to him. And she said that before I agreed, she wanted me to know a little bit about him and his condition. Dan was in his mid-50s and had been a UC Berkeley professor. He had ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. And this is that horrible neuromuscular disease that slowly breaks down a person's body, paralyzing and then ultimately killing them. The disease usually begins from the feet and works its way up until the person can no longer breathe and their heart eventually stops. The worst part is that the person's mind remains completely sharp while their body is dying. So my friend had been massaging Dan twice a week for a few months. Knowing that I was also a massage therapist, she asked if I could step into that role just until she got back. I remember how nervous I was as I parked my car in front of their house for the first time. His wife greeted me at the door and brought me to the living room where Dan was laying back in a specialized reclining wheelchair. He had lost the ability to talk just about a month before and was being fed through a tube in his stomach. He was unable to hold his head up, but when his eyes met mine, they were bright and clear. I got even more nervous. I wondered how was I going to communicate with him. But not wanting to appear terrified, I smiled and introduced myself and proceeded to roll up his pant legs and take off his shoes and socks and begin the massage. I quickly settled into the rhythm of the body work, giving his wasted muscles some needed care and circulation. And then at some point I realized that I was not really paying attention to what I was doing. I was not really being present with him. While my hands were massaging his calf muscles, my mind was elsewhere. I was thinking about what I might pick up for dinner. I was thinking about the Christmas presents that I still needed to buy. I was worrying about my term papers that were due soon. My thoughts seemed to be anywhere and everywhere else, except on the man whose disintegrating body I was touching. Once I realized that that was happening, I brought my attention back to him. I glanced around the room and I saw a framed picture of Dan laughing with his wife and his daughters on a river rafting trip. I guessed that it may have just been a year or two ago. A huge, heavily decorated Christmas tree loomed in the corner of the room, wrapped packages in piles beneath it. Joy to the World was playing softly on the stereo in the background. His wife, on the phone, speaking in hushed tones in the kitchen. As I let the horrible sadness of this family's grief seep in, tears began to well up in my eyes and my throat tightened. And that's when I realized that the reason I had such a difficult time keeping my mind present was because I didn't want to have to feel the pain and the terrible grief that infused everything in that house. My mind, by cleverly tossing in a million distractions, was trying to protect me from experiencing tremendous sadness. During each of my visits, I wrestled myself to give Dan my full attention. It became a spiritual practice. As I would notice thoughts come into my mind, I would gently bring my attention back into the room, back to his muscles and tendons, back to his breath and his heartbeat, back to my own breath and my heartbeat, and I had to do this over and over again. At the end of my last visit, Dan moved his eyes toward the other room and back to me, so I called for his caregiver. And she brought a large letter board, and Dan used his eyes to spell out the words, "Thank you. Merry Christmas." I looked into his eyes and I said, "You're welcome." And he died the following week. Sitting with and touching a dying man was not comfortable. There was nothing easy about it. But the starkness of the situation helped me understand in a deep and profound way how important it is to give one another our full presence. When life is slowly stripped away, it becomes clear that nothing, nothing at all, is more important. We need one another. We need to not feel alone. And this kind of life-affirming, deep soul-to-soul connection requires our presence and our participation. I will always be grateful to Dan for our connection and for his parting blessing. He has been one of my greatest spiritual teachers. The experience got me thinking about my state of awareness. I began to wonder how many times in the past had I not been present with somebody who was reaching out to me. Who in my life is asking for my presence right now? Am I being truly present with myself? Or might I be missing some crucial message that my soul is subtly trying to communicate? Can I hear the still, small voice of the Holy whispering to me? This much I know. To be simply present, either to yourself or with another person, is at once the easiest thing in the world and the most difficult. It takes great courage to simply be. It means not doing anything, not changing anything, not fixing anything. It means relinquishing control and letting go of the outcome. And this might be the scariest part. It requires us to be willing to feel the whole range of emotions that make up this human package. It invites us to have faith that feeling hard feelings will not be the end of us. Maybe some of you are wondering to yourself, why should I be open to somebody else's pain? Then I'm just feeling pain, and it's not my pain. I don't want to have to feel it. And you're welcome to do that. But know that that choice separates you from other people. Being present is a form of listening. You can always choose not to listen, but then what you're doing is isolating yourself, cutting yourself off from others, from yourself, and from life. My friends, we have entered into a time of great cultural turbulence. It can feel scary as long-held norms are being disrupted. But really, we are simply being asked to stop talking, stop defending, stop ignoring, and simply listen and be present to one another. Women are asking men to just listen to our experiences, hear us, believe us. People of color and indigenous people are asking white people to stop defending ourselves for 2 seconds and just listen to their experiences, see and acknowledge their pain. We are witnessing the cultural defense system at work, a great rearing up of anger and denial and dismissal. It is really hard to acknowledge that we have been a part of a system that has caused such harm. But this is the way that we will bring harmony between women and men, between the dominant culture and those who we white people have tried to push to the margins. If we're to find our way out of this mess, we have got to trust that being fully present to the pain that we have been a part of causing is not going to end us. It is, in fact, the only way through. The simple act of bearing witness to pain and loss begins the healing process. And the beauty of it, and the truth, is that the act of being simply present, of truly listening to one another, will bring us closer to one another. It'll end our isolation. It'll usher in an era of deeper compassion and respect and care. And isn't that the world that we want to live in? May it be so, and may we be a part of making it so. Amen. Blessed be.